Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Brave Talk, Building Resilient Relationships in the Face of Conflict, by Melody Stanford Martin. Narrated by Nancy Peterson. Publisher's Note: This audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Brave Talk into the search box. Follow the link to the book's page, then, under the supplemental content section, please enter the access code BRAVE, and then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures, tables, and illustrations referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Introduction. I was sitting around a campfire in the backwoods of Maine with my siblings and our respective partners. We were tired, it was late, we hadn't seen each other for a year, and for some god-awful reason we started talking about religion and politics. The conversation became explosive so fast, it was as if we had been plopped into a die-hard movie. We were open and honest with each other in ways that only family can be. Step one, obtain fire poker. Step two, heat with lava. Step three, aim for the heart. The repercussions lasted months. How could we have prevented this? Should we have prevented this? Did anything valuable happen in the rugged truth-telling of that night? Would we be able to bounce back in the wake? Would we ever be able to engage hard topics again? Many of us struggle with these kinds of tensions in our close relationships. Conversations like this are the inspiration for Brave Talk. This book takes a real look at the impact of interpersonal conflict in our lives and teaches better ways we can deal with it. Conflict is central to our human experience, central to our myths, histories, and even the testing grounds of our entertainment. It saturates our familial and national landscapes, seeping into our neighborhoods, and even creeping into our silent personal visions of the future. Humans are basically guaranteed to experience conflict. We may even encounter conflict that seems to have no beginning and no end. Despite conflict's ubiquity, many of us have never been trained in dealing with it. We stumble along in the dark, trying to find our way, often bashing into each other. Plenty of resources on the market aim to teach peace-building and conflict resolution, and these resources help a lot of communities. But they can be highly theoretical, academic, or written for highly trained practitioners. Some of these books even suggest that if we work hard enough, we can overcome conflict entirely. For many of us, such a hope feels hollow. The hardest conflict is the kind that won't go away. It's the kind that can't be resolved. What happens when we humans meet each other in a state of impasse, when neither party is willing to budge on strongly held opinions and beliefs, yet we possess a deeper, primal desire to live in community? We struggle. We struggle painfully. My history with impasse. Impasse has been a significant part of my life. For the last decade, I have experienced conflict, religious, political, ideological, relational, seemingly inescapable conflict. I grew up in a sleepy farming town on the central coast of California. Most people think of California as Rodeo Drive, surfing, and red convertibles gliding blithely up Highway 1. My experience was more like broccoli fields, strip malls, rodeo queens, and hanging out at church. Mostly it was hanging out at church because Dad was a Pentecostal minister. Up through my early adulthood, I found my faith tremendously life-giving. As I got older, this began to change, despite my best efforts to hang on. I began to take a very different path than the one I'd inherited. I chose to pursue left-leaning graduate education and began exploring more progressive identities and ethics. During this personal evolution, I was faced with a difficult choice: tell the truth, which would cause pain to close friends and family, or not tell the truth in order to keep the peace. I chose to be honest about the ways I was beginning to see the world. This honesty was heartbreaking and scary for people I love. While I maintain a deep respect for my roots and treasure many aspects of the way I was brought up, my journey has taken an immense toll on some of my closest and most important relationships. After 10 years, my family still grapples with the aftershock of a beloved child leaving the fold. And I grapple with the paradox of loving while disagreeing. I was married at 23, but 4 years later, my spouse and I came to terms with the fact that we were not compatible. With a pain-filled sense of responsibility, we concluded that the right thing to do was to end our marriage, especially before bringing children into the world. As much as my choice to divorce before the age of 30 was a deep personal tragedy, it created ripple effects of grief through my community. Though they acknowledged that the death of the marriage was the only choice that made sense to me, many friends and family members were shocked and baffled. Many thought I was in the wrong. People I held dear told me they would not recognize my divorce and would still consider me married. Impasse. Heartbreaking impasse. Difficult, frustrating impasse. In 2012, I decided to pursue the big questions of life, and seminary seemed to be a good place to go searching. I found my way to Boston University into a branch of studies called conflict transformation. Even in conflict classes, I felt like a rebel. Once, I asked a professor why all the case studies we were reading seemed to have tidy ways of resolving the conflict. They had answers that a person could find if they looked hard enough. This wasn't my experience with conflict. What happens when there is no answer, because neither side is willing to change or compromise? What then? I asked. He chuckled and thanked me for being in the class. Another time, a sweet elderly bishop came to lecture on the subject of forgiveness. I raised my hand and asked if we could talk about rage instead. I didn't mean to make a joke, but as you can imagine, this garnered a few laughs from the rest of the class. The bishop graciously answered, "Yes, there is a time to talk about rage, but let me get through my material." Some of my colleagues piped up and said, "With all due respect, Bishop, we would love to talk about rage too. We've all heard a million sermons on forgiveness. What do we do with our anger in times of conflict and powerlessness?" So you see, even highly trained people struggle with these issues. I have yet to meet someone who has impasse completely figured out. My studies, though important for my development as a thinker, have only helped me navigate the complexities of impasse in an indirect way. I never found a magic formula. I only found increasingly difficult questions and painful conversations with loved ones. Looking back on all these years, I wish I'd had some better tools at my disposal. I began writing Brave Talk in order to create such a toolkit, a set of skills that can help everyday people engage conflict and impasse more effectively and build stronger ties with others across hard differences. If at the very least this book helps listeners improve their relationship with conflict, if it awakens imaginations to seek new and creative ways to transform conflicted situations, if it restores even an ounce of hope for mending fractured relationships, then I will consider it a success. Those of us living now in the early 21st century in the United States are experiencing a constant toxic gridlock. The labeling, the soundbite takedowns, and the demonizing on all sides of the aisle are tragic to my patriotic heart. If right now our society were illustrated like a comic book, perhaps we could see the cracks that have formed in our relationships, the cracks that run through our democracy, gouging their way through families, splitting through even our concepts of human dignity. We'd see a world broken, with whole people swallowed. Such images would exist in that strange emotional space where cartoons drop their neon glow of comedy and start feeling too familiar. In a stratified world where global populations are increasingly polarized and segmented. We need people who can build bridges across those invisible cracks. Though my personal journey with impasse has not been easy, something significant has happened. Because of my background, I've become something of an ideological polyglot, someone who is able to speak multiple religious and political languages. While it is true that my voice today comes from a more leftist political and religious standpoint, and my convictions are indeed fierce, I am a liberal who remembers what it was like to be a conservative. My desire to be a well-meaning and loving person in the world has never changed, despite my shift in views. Because of this, I believe it's vitally important to empathize with the other. In my case, the other I used to be. But as many of us know firsthand, empathy can be a challenge. It can even be a social liability, a riptide of folly in a shaming and shutdown culture. More than once, I've feared that if I publicly express too much empathy for the other, I will be pelted with rotten vegetation. How did we become so stratified, so entrenched in animosity? It strikes me that screaming past each other is counterproductive. It is far from our collective best interest. In our zeal to be right, and in exercising our right to scream, many of us destroy relationships, relinquish credibility, and become completely ineffective to the people we most want to influence. Yes, we live in a noisy world, and it takes a lot to be heard, but this is nonsense. Who is to blame for the state we find ourselves in? The credit for this turmoil can't possibly be the sole victory of a handful of government pundits or news-hawking media giants. No, this broken landscape can only come about by many, many people choosing to participate in broken ways of relating. How do we turn it around? The answer is not a magic formula. The answer is changing our relationship with conflict itself. It means learning skills of healthy disagreement. It means that we can hold fast to our convictions while allowing others to sharpen us and our ideas. And it means engaging impasse in ways that help us truly see each other and let ourselves be seen. This is how we reclaim our society. We build resilient relationships that can handle the weight of conflict. I have bad news for anyone listening to this book. Conflict will probably always be with us. Impasse, or unresolvable conflict, will probably still be impasse. It will remain that uncomfortable place of trying to have a relationship by agreeing to disagree. Blech. Some conflict never goes away, and it's unrealistic to expect that it will. Humans have different needs. Beliefs are at odds. Values misalign. We hold different visions of how the world should operate. But here's the good news. We can learn not only to deal with conflict and impasse better, but also to see its value and appreciate its vital role in our lives. I can speak from personal experience. My family has taken a long time to be able to have conversations about real things that don't escalate into tear-filled festivals of agony. Yes, we still have our arguments, and it's likely we will never agree on really important issues. Issues close to the heart of who we are. We are definitely still a work in progress. However, over time, we have gotten better at dealing with being at odds. We have gotten healthier in the ways we interact, healthier in our boundaries. We have learned to let ourselves be uncomfortable for the sake of each other. We have learned to bounce back and show love, despite the existence of hard truths. Each time we come together, we get a little stronger in our skills. We can talk about tough things a little longer than the last time without wanting to run away. It didn't happen overnight. It still takes work and patience and practice, and we still have work to do. But now that we have developed stronger skills, talking about hard things is almost productive. It brings us closer. It makes us deeper and more loving people. The point is, it is possible to get better at conflict. Though it's hard, Working through these things is worth every ounce of effort. Why? Because we are not the type of family that is content to be just talking about the weather. While disagreeing on important things feels unacceptable, being distant from each other is more unacceptable. That primal drive to be in community, that desire to share, utter an unconditional love, is irreplaceable. I wouldn't trade it for even the quietest corners of conformity. About this book. Brave Talk explores a paradoxical set of questions. How do we care for each other while we navigate impasse? How do we honor the complexities of difference while keeping a firm grasp on the values we do share? How do we transform the animosity of impasse into resilient relationships that are the bedrock of community? This is first and foremost a book of stories. Our brains don't hold lists of values or rules very well. We are most at home in stories. Stories are what connect our brains to our hearts. Stories get under our skin and expand our capacity to imagine and act. I created Brave Talk around the belief that true wisdom leans into curiosity, humility, and a small amount of foolishness. This book is a hybrid of sorts. It draws from rigorous contemporary scholarship in critical theory, rhetoric, ethics, and restorative justice, while being unapologetically quirky and embracing the fullness of humanity. My goal in writing this book was to create a resource that truly is for everyone, not just academics or community organizers. Why? Because everyone deserves the chance to build healthy skills of conflict transformation. Many people don't have access to this kind of training. Since we all deal with conflict and impasse, we all deserve chances to get good at dealing with it. Using this book. Brave Talk can be listened to by individuals, but it shines best in community. The book is designed to be used in a book club or a workshop format, so groups can learn together. In addition to Brave Talk, which is full of ideas and concepts to fuel group conversation, I've created an interactive tool called Brave Talk Basecamp. Basecamp is a unique, repeatable exercise that helps groups practice difficult conversations in a structured, co-creative environment. Visit Appendix A for a sneak peek. Consider gathering a diverse group of people together and meeting weekly. Each week, the group can listen to a chapter of the book to learn skills and ideas, and then stage a base camp to practice what they learn. You can find out more at bravetalkproject.com. Note, if at any time conversations around this book become dangerous or abusive, put down the book and seek professional help from a helping professional, such as a psychologist, mediator, crisis counselor, chaplain, or clergy person. What this world needs. I hope Brave Talk sparks a movement of bridge builders, imaginative, full-throttle, fluid thinkers and speakers who bring the expansiveness of their energy and creativity into the challenging and difficult places of impasse. I welcome the vision questers and the second guessers, the cynics and the jokers, the logical thinkers, the wishful thinkers, and even those who take themselves way too seriously. Your light is desperately needed in a fractured world. Part 1. Understanding Impasse. Engaging the secrets of impasse. Exploring how fear works at the center of conflict and impasse. Addressing the ways power shapes impasse. Chapter 1. 3 Secrets of Impasse. Engaging the elephant in the room. It's a sunny afternoon in May. The whole family is gathered around a table under a shady tree to celebrate Timmy's birthday. Mom appears with a candle-lit cake. Grandma is crying and holding her camera, and children squirm in their chairs, jealously gazing at the birthday kid. Excitement ripples through the crowd, waiting for Mom's signal. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, little Timmy. Happy birthday to... But no one sings the last note. They leave it hanging. As you listen to that story, Did you subconsciously fill in the last note with you? Maybe you even sang it out loud. Most people will experience a strong sense of annoyance if they hear the song without that last note. There's actually an explanation for this. In music theory, the tonic is the bass note that pulls all the other notes toward it. Ending the song on the tonic gives a sense of completion. The supertonic sits just above the tonic, pulling listeners like a magnet back to the tonic. In Happy Birthday to You, the supertonic is the two that comes before the final you. Without the tonic, the last note you, that supertonic two has a heavy sense of gravity but nowhere to land. For those of us who have listened to popular music our whole lives, we are conditioned to search for and even expect the tonic's resolution. When the resolution should come but doesn't, we can feel lost and even disoriented. In other words, we crave resolution. It's the same in conflict. When conflict is clean and resolves, when the good guy wins and the bad guy gets what he deserves, that feels like redemption. It feels as if the world is restored to the way it ought to be. When two people vocalize a problem, fight cleanly, fix the issue or misunderstanding, and hug it out as if they're in a scene from a 90s sitcom, that feels right to us. Something inside of us sighs with relief. Resolution feels deeply gratifying. However, a lot of real conflict simply doesn't play out that way. In the real world, there's no team of writers engineering a storyline. There's no season finale when all the loose ends magically come together. Reality commonly looks like two stags, antlers locked, unable to disentangle and unwilling to back down. Too often, there isn't a clear good guy or bad guy. We find ourselves colliding with warring, overlapping needs and interests. Just like the stags, we usually don't fight to be cruel. We fight for legitimacy and survival. This can create an extreme and unresolvable form of conflict. Impasse. Impasse affects us deeply. Please see me. I am trying to see you. Neither of us will move. Neither of us can move the other. How do we make sense of this? Where do we go from here? This is the language of impasse. Impasse is when each party holds an internally consistent understanding of reality and meaning, but those understandings are utterly at odds. It's an extreme type of conflict that can put us in a perpetual state of upendedness with people we're supposed to be close to. It's the supertonic note with nowhere to land, a state of unresolvable difference. Impasse often takes us to a weird in-between emotional space where we don't know how to act. Anthropologists and cultural experts have a word for being socially in-between: liminal. Liminal space is where suspension and transition happen. It's a space where something old has passed away, but the new thing hasn't come yet. A classic example is a rite of passage ceremony where a young person is no longer to be considered a child, but will be recognized as an adult. For a brief moment in that ceremony, there is a liminal space where childhood is suspended to make way for adulthood. That point of transition or border, where the old is no longer, but the new is not yet, is the liminal. Sometimes liminal spaces last a lot longer than a moment. They are meant to be temporary, yet we can get stuck in them. Impasse can cause us to get stuck in the liminal. We can't live in peace as we once had because we are at odds, but we can't move forward because we can't resolve things. So we find ourselves in this place that feels ambiguous, structureless, and even difficult to talk about. When there is nothing anyone can do, when neither side is willing to budge, our inability to resolve things or move forward can short-circuit our brains and inspire strange actions. Sometimes, impasse simply gets ignored as we try to live normal lives. Impasse is the elephant in the room that everyone silently agrees to avoid. It's that holiday meal where everyone is loudly not talking about the issue. Instead, With smiles plastered, they pretend nothing is wrong. Over time, this avoidance causes relational damage. Discussions and connections stay at surface level, and we drift apart without realizing it. We lose our ability to be close to each other. Other times, impasse goes nuclear. It sparks terrible fights and wounds. We lash out because the unspoken issue is so important to us, and we have no idea how to navigate the tension that won't go away. It can end up looking like a battle of the bands, with every band angrily blasting its own kind of music at the same time. Harmony, respect, and sense often feel impossible. When this happens, relationships can be damaged beyond repair. No matter the outcome, impasse generally feels awful. It can seem highly risky to address or unpack. It's tempting to cut the journey short with a terse, "Let's just agree to disagree." However, let's explore a significant, important thing that happens when we say the words, "We are at an impasse." When we name this reality, we are recognizing that we can't change the situation, and we can't convince anyone else to change it. We are in the liminal space, but we are at least both here together. Naming an impasse means we have decided not to use force to get our way. We are, for the sake of love or justice, trying to accept the unacceptable while knowing that, by definition, accepting the unacceptable is impossible. When we accept our inability to control each other, we open a door to a set of opportunities. We may never like conflict or be comfortable with it, but we can learn to transform it. We can learn to turn away from antagonism and instead turn toward possibility. Whether the conflict we experience is resolvable or unresolvable, we have a lot of choice in how we engage. Three secrets of impasse. To be in true community with our family and neighbors who see the world differently than we do, and to have meaningful relationships and a healthy society across hard differences, we must learn to meet each other in impasse and harness its power for the better before it gets the better of us. There are three secrets that can help us do this. These secrets of engaging impasse are not magic formulas, but practicing them can change our relationship with conflict and make it more productive. 1. Approach every conflict as if it's an impasse. This first secret is the central idea of this book. Focus on relationships, not on resolution. Yes, you heard that right. I'm suggesting that the best approach to conflict is to put off trying to resolve it. Pretend the situation is unresolvable, at least temporarily, until both parties feel they've had enough time to mend the relationship and feel heard. Even if you think there's an answer, or there should be an answer, try sitting in the awkward middle space of impasse. Why? When we focus on finding a resolution, we often skip the important steps of actually understanding each other. When we make it our priority to really see one another, when we focus on trying honestly and openly to get where each other is coming from, resolutions will often present themselves almost as if by accident. Deepening our understanding and building relationships over and above trying to resolve issues may seem strange, but it is often more effective than trying to resolve issues directly. It helps us see the bigger picture in new and important ways. On paper, this might seem easy, but in practice, it is incredibly challenging. We might have to work against our own instincts to make this kind of space for each other. I grew up near the beach, and sometimes my family would drive out to the water only to encounter a metal sign bearing a riptide warning, letting us know that swimming was not allowed that day. A riptide is a phenomenon that happens when the top of the ocean water seems calm, but below the surface, there is a powerful undertow that carries swimmers away from the shore. Getting caught in one can be a terrifying experience. Usually, when someone is caught in a riptide, instinct kicks in to struggle against the tide and get to land as quickly as possible. The problem is, a riptide is too powerful. Even experienced swimmers will dangerously expend all their energy before they make it to land. To survive, some ocean experts advise, the swimmer should lie back and float. Others advise swimming parallel.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?